We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my great honor to welcome you to today's Leading for Equity webinar from AASA. I'm Valerie Truesdale, and I have the honor of serving as Assistant Executive Director for the Superintendents Association. We're very pleased that you chose to join us today. The reason we start with a little video from kids is so that you will understand that we have students represented with us today. This is our why. What we are doing with this series is to examine with you and learn from you all as leaders, and we support you all as courageous leaders as we all learn how to move through this COVID time together. We are at a place in our history where we need to examine, rethink what we're doing with education, reimagine a future that can be more student-centered and equity-focused. Today's webinar is about data-driven equity audits and district protocols for success. We're so pleased to have a distinguished panel with us. I do want to tell our participants today how much we appreciate your investing your time in your personal growth and hope that we are building collective impact by studying and learning together around equity. Why equity? We at AASA believe that we owe it to every youngster in our country to have to examine our practices and our policies and our protocols that limit access and opportunity for children of color and low-income children in particularly. Our marginalized kids are forefront of our discussion today, but I do want to make the point that leading for equity benefits all kids, and it is our cornerstone of our webinar series on Thursday evenings. We invite you to share with us each evening, each Thursday evening, as we examine lots of aspects of leading for equity and equity agenda. Our panel this evening is quite distinguished. We have with us Dr. Layla Newland, who is a director at Hanover Research, and she will be presenting the research context. And then two dynamic thought leader practitioners, Dr. Daryl Camp, superintendent in San Lorenzo, California, and Dr. Greg Hutchings. And it was Dr. Hutchings' students that we just saw on the video. He is superintendent in Alexandria City Schools in Virginia. And these folks have been using equity audits and examining the practices and protocols in their communities that represent the application of the research that Layla will share with us today. So hold on to your seats. We're in for a really, really dynamic discussion today. I want to introduce to you all Dr. Layla Newland, who is a research professional. And I will tell you, working with her has just been a joy because she's able to take the reality of the workplace and take it into what does the research say about this activity or this practice and help us learn and grow. Layla, would you start us out today?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you to AASA for inviting me to join this panel. I'm so honored to be here, and I'm excited to learn with all of you in the next hour. So what I'd like to do is start with grounding this discussion in the systemic inequities that we have across the country, and then narrow down into how district and school leaders can take this knowledge and what the research says and start doing a deep dive examination within their districts, and then pass it over to Dr. Camp and Dr. Hutchings to share how they're doing this work within their districts. So one of the things that is important to note that may not come as a surprise to many who are with us this evening is we continue to see a correlation between access to experienced and certified teachers being correlated to student achievement and student outcomes. And yet, what one of the recent Learning Policy Institute reports shows is we continue to see inequities in access. And that's one of the things that not only is it important to understand the macro level of what these trends are at the national level, but also understanding what the trends are within your district. And so first, I want to just anchor everybody's understanding to what we are currently seeing across the country. In addition, high poverty schools have a lower proportion of white students. So what we continue to see in this country within districts and across regions and across the nation is these systemic inequities and segregation, despite having policies and laws that were supposed to dismantle segregation, we continue to see segregated schools in this country. The other important piece that I want to highlight here is when we start to look at programming. So I talked a little bit about teachers. The other piece that we need to make sure that we're thinking about is access to programming and the trajectories of our students. And what we continue to see when we look at national data sets is an uneven distribution of students who are enrolled in AP or who are encouraged to enroll in gifted and talented. And it's important for us to reflect on the why. So what I'm showing you right now is the what, but what we need to do, and what I'd like to talk a little bit about over the next few minutes, is how you can look at the why. The other point that I want to highlight is discipline disproportionality. So for years here at Hanover, we've talked to individual district leaders about how we continue to see a higher proportion of Black and Latinx students who are either suspended in school or out of school. And yet these trends persist even in the past year or two. And finally, when we look at NAEP scores, we continue to see the inequities in student outcomes. And so the major question today is, why do we have this and how can we start dismantling it? And so what I would suggest and what we here at Hanover have done is we've curated the research on conducting an equity audit. It's important to note there's no single methodology for conducting an equity audit. And so the research brief that we'll be sharing in the chat will highlight what some of the research suggests. And what we've done is we've synthesized that into what we hope is an easy to consume guide for conducting an equity audit within your school district. And so the key questions that we suggest you consider is thinking about to what extent does the district offer a diverse, equitable, and inclusive programming within its environment. You also need to look at your policies and practices, administration and finance, the resource allocation, as well as curriculum and instruction. And I want to pause there for a moment because one of the things that we often see in our research and our work is we tend to jump to curriculum and instruction, which is absolutely a critical piece of the question. But it's also important for us to pause and think about resource allocation, as well as hiring practices. Do our staff feel like the work environment is diverse, equitable, and inclusive? Because one of the things that we've seen in our research is it also starts with the work environment. If we don't have diversity, equity, and inclusion within the work environment, then is it likely that we're going to be able to provide that in the classroom environment within our district? And so one of the things that you can do to start is start looking at the what. So you need to diagnose. So the way we've broken this up and the way I like to think about this is in a phased approach. Another caution that I would share is we all understand that there's urgency and we understand that there's importance to the work that we're doing around equity audits. However, if we try to do too much at once, we're going to set ourselves up for failure because systemic change is slow. And we also have to make sure that we're locking arms with all of our stakeholders. And those stakeholders go beyond the school district, right? So we have to think about local agencies. And so that's why it doesn't have to necessarily be 3 years the way I have it structured here, but we've designed it this way to help establish manageable expectations so that we don't set ourselves up for failures and disappointments. And so thinking of phase one, whether it's year one, but phase one as diagnose and build your framework. And by that, I mean, define what you mean by equity. This is driven by local context and what you mean by equity and what your community needs to hear and the populations that are represented are very local in context. And so it's important for you to identify the what and build the framework at the front end. And then as you progress, you have to know the why. So once we've identified what are our deficits, we know there are some deficits, and we might even have anecdotes, but really making sure that you're deliberate about looking at different data points and then shifting to why. So we know what we have. So what is going on here? So I'll use course trajectory analysis as an example of this. We had a district in North Carolina at one point have us conduct interviews with guidance counselors as well as staff to understand why is it that when we were looking at Black and Brown students who were on the same achievement level as their white peers in elementary school, and yet in middle school, all of a sudden their course trajectory changed. So let's understand, let's unpack that a bit. What's going on at the school level and in the classroom level that we start to see those shifts happen? And then finally, moving to reform. So if we know what and we know why, now we're ready to determine what is it that we want to change? How are we going to change it? And then most importantly, how are we going to monitor that change? And this note applies beyond just the equity work that we do, and I'm sure this will resonate with many of the district leaders in this meeting. But when we don't have a plan for how we're going to monitor our change and assess our achievement of our goals, then we are also setting ourselves up for failure. So what we want to make sure is that we're building this work and conducting this work within the continuous improvement frameworks that so many of you already have in place, so that you know, where are we? Where do we hope to be? How are we going to get there? And so what I'd like to do is now have my panelist colleagues share what it is that they're doing in their districts and where they are on their journeys. So I'd like to pass it over to Dr. Daryl Camp. Daryl is the current superintendent of San Lorenzo Unified School District, and I'm so excited to have him share about the different ways they're addressing inequities at the system level and how that's trickling and permeating throughout San Lorenzo Unified School District. Daryl?
Yeah, appreciate it, Layla. Really appreciate the opportunity to share, and thank you for the work that you're doing as a researcher with Hanover Research. We always need to keep our work in partnership with researchers because that helps us to understand the phenomenons that are happening throughout our school districts, our state, and of course, our global community. So once again, thanks to Hanover and thanks to AASA for the opportunity to share. Also, thank you to the Association of California School Administrators, which was my initial connection to Hanover. And then I serve as also the president of the California Association of African American Superintendents and Administrators. As Layla mentioned, I currently work for San Lorenzo, and I'm honored to be able to share. Much of what I will be sharing today is the work of a number of excellent equity warriors that we have here in San Lorenzo that were here before my time. This is only my second year in the district, and I can truly say that I feel like we found the right fit, and we'll be talking about that momentarily. So once again, thank you again for the opportunity to share. I have to admit, I do feel like I'm the warm-up act before the main star comes on, Dr. Greg Hutchins right here. So I'm going to try to warm you up, and then he'll take it and take this concert to the all-time high, I'm sure. So like I mentioned, I serve as the superintendent of the San Lorenzo Unified School District. We're located in the Bay Area, Northern California. And our school system, we're a school system of about 9,500 students. We have three comprehensive high schools, one continuation high school. We have three middle schools, nine elementaries, and we also run an adult school program. I came to this district after serving a fabulous time in a small district in the Central Valley called Riverbank, and served there as superintendent for 7 years before deciding I wanted a different type of a challenge, and I wanted to come back to my home area, which is the Bay Area where I grew up. I was attracted to San Lorenzo somewhat because of the mission and the vision. You'll notice in our vision statement, which I'm not going to read to you, the last words there, I was attracted when it's about the words, all students will become And the parts that resonated for me were the civically engaged advocates for equity and social justice. So oftentimes I recognize that words are just on a page and there's not much thought that goes into, well, I'm not going to say not much thought, but sometimes the words and the mission and vision statements of a school district sit on a wall or on a binders, but it's not really lived. And I was curious about what it meant to San Lorenzo Unified. And during my opportunities where I had a chance to meet and interview with the Board of Education, what resonated for me was these were more than just words. This is what the board truly believed in. And then as I joined the district and my first few weeks and months on the job, I recognize that I'm at a special place. I'm truly at a special place where we freely discuss the impacts of equity, and not just equity, racial equity in our schools. So we have very candid conversations about the impact of race on schooling and education. From that time, I knew I was in the right place at the right time. You know, anecdotally, as on a personal level, the place where I felt most engaged and alive during my educational experience, either as a student or a practitioner or educator, was when I went to school at Morehouse College in Georgia. One of the reasons was I felt like it was a place created where I could have candid conversations about the intersection of the content and the lived experiences of me and my community. So I feel like that same dynamic has its potential here in San Lorenzo. And I'm working with a number of great educators in order to make that a reality for our students. So what does our student body look like? You can see we're a very diverse student body. When you look at our ethnicities, I'm not going to read that to you, but our majority would be Latinx students about at 56%. Next would come our Asian American students at 15%, 14.8%, African American about 10%. And you can see what our Filipinx and our white students look like as well, 8% or 7.6% for white and about the same for Filipino or Filipinx. Our home languages, we have a number of languages spoken. Spanish, Mandarin, or Cantonese are our main two outside of English. But we do have a number of languages spoken in our school district. Our emerging bilinguals or English learners, emerging bilinguals, we want to give credit as an asset in terms of the languages that are being added, but outside of English. We think that is great to have two or more languages. And about 25% of our students grow up in homes that speak a language other than English. And you can see that represented there. We also reclassify a number of students, and the reclassified students are already at least have gone through a process to show proficiency in English, and we suspect in another home language as well. Our free and reduced price lunch, you can see it, about 70% of our students take advantage of the free and reduced price meal program. And once again, we see that as an asset. Sometimes the students that are the families that have to navigate different financial circumstances have the ability to adapt to circumstances that are differently when you come from a more advantaged financial home. So I just want to mention that. I mentioned before that I'm just one member of our organization that has had a role in the equity work here in San Lorenzo. We have a line of educators, and this shows the timeline in which we've been engaged in the equity work. Obviously, it probably started before, I know it started before 2008, because San Lorenzo has a history, and it's not a pretty history in terms of race. It's a community that was created as a place for, it was a community that was created that has some housing restrictions that banned African-Americans and other people of color from living in the community. And that was around the World War II time period. Even before then, we acknowledged that the land that we sit on is not the land of the people that currently occupy the land. This was land of Native Americans, and particularly the Ohlone tribe was a part of this area. So we've had conversations, and this is our journey in the last 12 years. Our last 12 years under the leadership of people like Dr. Sahili, and we had an assistant superintendent, Barb DeBarger, and then a current HR person, Baylen Majors that have really taken us through this journey of having racialized equity conversations. And I want to highlight not just equity, but racialized. And you can see that on the slides. We have engaged in a partnership that I'll talk about in a moment with the Pacific Educational Group starting in 2018. And then once again, I came on board in 2019. So this is a journey, and it didn't just start overnight for us, but I clearly think that we're in the right place. I won't say at the right time, because I think we could have probably been doing this 10, 15 years earlier, right? But I think that I do want to elevate the voices that led us to get to the place where we are. One thing, as part of that evolutionary process, our board engaged in some work last year. We recognized that despite all the work that we were doing and the numerous conversations, discussions we've had, that the board did not have an equity policy. So we looked at equity policies from different districts from around the nation, and along with the sample policy by the California School Boards Association. And we put a lot of time and effort into developing our version of an equity policy. So once again, the board, making sure that the board is part of the work, that was critical. We say, if I have to take a couple of key principles, I would say that the board has to be on board. My HR person, Baylen, says that often. The board has to be on board with the work. And I would add to that by saying that the superintendent and the board and the vision of the organization have to be in alignment when you're doing equity work. If there's any misalignment, that will show when people complain about the work that you're doing with equity, in particular, racial equity. We know it's hard to discuss race. It makes people uncomfortable, but we feel like it's the right thing to do, not for us, but for the students that we serve. And I would say that there's some collateral benefits that happen to the educators that serve in those systems. I talk to so many educators that say, I wanted to be an educator because I wanted to make change for the behalf of students. And then I get in these cultures, and these cultures aren't healthy enough to support the educator that wants to do the work. So by having the board on board, as exemplified by the equity policy, it's a way of aligning the organization. So I highlighted the words racial equity gap as a part of what we decided. You know, we talk about other forms of other isms, but we make sure we isolate race. So if we're talking about sexism, we're going to talk about sexism and race. If we talk about rights of, you know, lesbian, gay, bi, transsexual, bisexual, and race, you know, it's always going to be and race. We can't exclude that. If you allow people to exclude race, they will, I guarantee you, because it's the hardest of the isms to discuss. So you can see more of the language in our equity policy here, closing the opportunity and racial achievement gap. We're explicit. If you're not explicit about it, there'll be other forms of diversity that will take over the conversation. And we acknowledge in the equity statement that educational equity, it goes beyond equality, because that's a popular concept in the United States, equality. And we said equality doesn't mean equal. In other words, equality doesn't mean we're giving our students what they need in order to achieve. So we want to make sure we're treating each and every student equitably in such a way that it promotes equity, which is a deeper form of equality, I think. It's meeting more where the students are. Probably messed that up, but hopefully you get the point. And then I want to piggyback on this too. Before I got here, the district did a lot of work on framing the conversation and what we call the anti-bias guiding principles. And in our anti-bias guiding principles, now we've embedded that within our equity policy, and we're explicit. We recognize that we're complicit as educators in a system that wasn't designed to meet the needs of several of our students. They weren't designed to engage and bring out the spirit and make our students alive. So we recognize that if you worked in this system and you made it this far to work in a system like a school system, that means you're probably complicit in duplicating and replicating the a system that wasn't designed for the benefits of students. So we're clear about holding ourselves accountable and holding each other accountable, that it's our responsibility not just to be not racist, but to be anti-racist in our approach. We believe that it's a proactive step that you must take at the conscious level in order to interrupt, disrupt, and dismantle this system that wasn't designed for all of our students. So you can see, as well as beside our policy, our equity policy, we have an anti-harassment policy that was adopted by the board in June, just a few months ago as well. So once again, I acknowledge a lot of work was done before I got here, and we've been working on systems alignment to make sure. And these policies are exemplars of making sure that the board's on board. One of the strategies that I would, I'm going to try to put in place here. Let's see how it works. But I'm going to ask the board to update the policy on equity every year. You know, boards always change, and they do. So I think it's important for us to have a discussion at least annually about what it means, where are we in the journey, what might be some of the barriers or obstacles and pushback that are ahead of us. And then I'm going to ask the board to recommit. It's a way of making sure that our organization is still in alignment. Now, I admit, sometimes in politics, what might happen would be board members might be voted out on a platform that we, somebody coming in could say, I don't like talking about race. I just want to know that if the board says and doesn't have enough votes in order to support the policy, then me as an educator and a superintendent, I have to say, boy, is this still the right fit for me? And I acknowledge that's part of the work because, everything doesn't last forever. But I do think it's important that we're in alignment when we're having this discussion. So I won't read these to you, but you can see the bottom there. Students we want to make sure we give some instructions about, or our board was really adamant and had a real rich discussion with community involvement about this. You know, we had conversation. Do we include the N-word in a policy? And you can see it there. We had conversations about when you're rereading stories, what are your expectations for students? Are we replicating the trauma that students are experiencing when they read certain literary pieces of art, right? The traditional curriculum sometimes makes students feel very uncomfortable. And we want to give greater guidance to our educators about what the board expected. And you see that there. Students will not be instructed to recreate, reenact, draw, or repeat racist, hateful. Because we heard from our students. Our students said, that makes me feel uncomfortable. And I know as a student in K-12, that made me feel uncomfortable sometimes, especially if you're the only Black student sitting in a room or one of two, and everybody looks at you when certain subjects come up. So I appreciate our board and our community for engaging in that discussion. I just took this picture to show you that says that our leadership matches, or not matches, but we purposely hire to see if we can have administrators and people that work in our system, teachers, classified employees that look like our students. One of the things that we started doing recently, just this year or last year, for the last few months, when we post positions for our district, we say we want an equity focus. So everything is equity focused. And I can tell you from sitting in on interview panels, like when we hired our educational services assistant superintendent, Tracy Noriega, the people interviewing for our positions, especially our cabinet level or upper level positions, they reference that post, equity focus. And then once again, that since we posted and we recognize that's attracting people, the next step is making sure we're living what we post. So that's holding ourselves accountable. So our journey is going to continue. In fact, it will never end. And some of the things that we're doing right now, we do have site equity, racial equity walks. We have monthly cabinet leadership meetings where we discuss where we are and where our kids are in our school system. We have monthly district equity leadership. In fact, we have one later on today, where our leaders come together and we talk about equity. We actually get in affinity groups too. Like I meet with, we have an African-American group. We have just different groups or pods that are part of affirming the work that we do in creating safe spaces. I mentioned creating a culture where people can feel comfortable. I think it's really important because leading as a person of color and leading as a white person, a European-American, has unique challenges. So we've created spaces for people to be validated and have a space to have discussions given their unique challenges. We continue our partnership with Glenn Singleton and the Pacific Educational Group. Many of you may be aware of Glenn and his work, just a thought leader when it comes to racial equity, and we really appreciate that partnership. Just 2 weeks ago, we had over 300 of our teaching staff and our school site educators, our support staff as well, go through a two-day workshop called Beyond Diversity, which I won't go into that, but it's a combination of agreements and conditions that get people to think differently than what they probably have before about race. We continue to, the LEADS is really a leadership for development and sustainability. We participate in that, trying to once again build the tools of our educators. And what I'm really excited about this year, we're starting a Students Organized Against Racism group. So that's part of engaging the students. And of course, we'll also want to engage our community as well. So with that, I'm just going to say thank you. Hopefully I've warmed them up, and we're going to hear from Dr. Hutchins right now. And I feel like he's, as we said earlier, my brother from another mother. We did not coordinate this bow tie, but we were definitely in alignment. I feel like I've known him for years, even though we just met about a week ago? Well, yesterday in terms of visually, and then maybe on another phone call a while ago. He's the superintendent of the Alexandria City Public Schools. He's done some work with the International Baccalaureate Program. He's also, before returning to your current school district, he was the superintendent in Shaker Heights, Cleveland, Ohio, where he served as superintendent for a five-year period. And now he's doing some outstanding work. As he was talking and I was reviewing his slides, I was still in and taking notes too. So Dr. Hutchins, welcome again. And I'm glad to, and I'm honored to be on the same panel as yourself, and nice bow tie.
Thank you, and I'm just as honored, and thank you for sharing that information with everybody, because I learned a lot just from you talking about San Lorenzo. This work is so important, and I think that it really does take, you know, courageous leaders to be willing to step out there to do this very, very challenging work. So I want to get into, you know, we've been able to talk about some of the statistics and the research, and Dr. Camp was able to talk about the policies and the practices that are happening. You know, I want to be able to talk about, how do you navigate that? Like, how do you actually get your organization or your school division, or put them in a situation where they can tackle or dismantle systemic racism? And we know this through equity, and it's also through making sure that that strategic plan is in place. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But first, of course, I got to talk somewhat about my wonderful school division, because I'm one, a proud product of Alexandria City Public Schools. I'm a graduate of T.C. Williams High School, and I spent kindergarten through 12th grade in Alexandria City Public Schools. So now to be able to come back and serve the community that gave me the foundation that I have to be able to serve as superintendent is pretty remarkable. And I pinch myself all the time, you know, especially those days when I'm having my down moments and being bullied by so many people out in this world. I have to think about my purpose and how long or how far I've come. So Alexandria is a small suburban city that's located right outside of Washington, D.C. We have about 16,000 students, a little over 1,400 teachers, 18 schools. You know, we are probably one of the most, or we are one of the most, I think, not successful, but richest school divisions, or cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia, as well as across the United States of America. However, as you'll see, our demographics in our economically disadvantaged students are at 61%. So a lot of times people are surprised that, you know, one of the richest cities in the country has a, you know, public school system with about 61% of our students who are eligible for free or reduced lunch. And it's important for you also to see that, you know, our demographics in regards to race are almost a third, with our highest student population right now being Hispanic students in the city of Alexandria, which is also a surprise to people. People assume Alexandria, because of the wonderful, you know, historic area that we have people from all over the world come to visit, to see us here in the city of Alexandria. And then when they discover our school division is so different than the demographics of our community, they're surprised. And it also brings a lot of challenges for us. You know, it's a lot of great things because we get funding and things of that nature, but there are a lot of challenges in regards to just that disconnect with what kids need in our school division versus what our community members think they already have, because they just don't know. And we're spending our job and our time constantly trying to remind them that our student population does not mirror our community. I want to talk and start here with the dual pandemic, because as you all know, we are all in this right now together. We have the coronavirus and this global pandemic that is related to this coronavirus. And then we also have a racial divide. And I don't know if you all believe it or not, but if you don't believe it, I hope you've been watching the news recently, because we just had an election and we just saw that our country is split right in half in regards to what we need to do with racial equity in the United States of America, which is shocking to me, because when you think of when our president, John F. Kennedy, became president of the United States back in November of 1960, there was also a racial divide. John F. Kennedy only won the presidency by 100,000 votes. So we had a very similar situation that we just experienced 2 weeks ago. So that gives me that question of how far have we come? Now, let me say, I have to just say this very clearly. Black people are able to vote. We are able to drink out of any water fountain that we choose. We've had a Black president of the United States. We have an incoming Black vice woman president of the United States. And we are CEOs and billionaires like Oprah. So we've come a long way. So I want to make sure I give honor to the to how far we have come. However, when you look at where our country is in regards to race, we are still divided 60 years later, which is very shocking to me. And I say this time and time again, as an African-American superintendent in a predominantly white city, not predominantly white school division, but predominantly white city, there brings challenges still in 2020. So I want to talk a little bit about why you need to have courage and why you need to be bold within your leadership. If you are trying to take on equity, which to me is one of the biggest jobs in the world, if you are not courageous and if you are not bold, you are not going to change the culture within your school division. You know, you got to put yourself on the line. I mean, simple as that. You got to be in it to win it. You got to be ride or die. And if you're not, you're not going to survive. And I try to be as blunt and honest as I can to people who come and join us on this work. You get excited about talking about equity and all the wonderful things that come out of it, but there are implications for taking on this journey. And it can at times cost you your job. You know, it's literally that. And we got to be honest about it. It can cost you your job. And you have to believe in it so much that you are willing to do whatever it takes to provide every single student these quality educations and to remove these barriers that have been around since the beginning of public education. Alexandria City Public Schools, we partnered with Hanover Research, and I'm so glad to see Dr. Newland on this because we worked very closely with them with developing our strategic plan. There were three specific things that we wanted to focus on. And one is benchmarking the inclusion of equity in strategic plans and looking at school divisions across the country. I wish I would have known about San Lorenzo. You know, I would have been contacting you, my brother. You know, when we started this this journey, you know, a year ago, when we were developing our team and getting through and developing, our strategic plan as well. But our board adopted unanimously our strategic plan this past June, which I'm excited about. I'm also going to talk a little bit about our strategic planning workbook, because we worked collaboratively with Hanover Research. And it's something that Hanover has been talking about. People have called me from all over the country now about this book. And I'm assuming because Hanover talks about us, you know, across the country. But they're always like, what are you all doing with your strategic plan workbook? And how did you all create this? And why did you all create this? But that information is shared with you. And we're sending a copy for you all to see if you'll see it in the chat over there. And then also a very important component is analyzing our classroom distribution. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. So let's talk quickly about district benchmarking. And I mentioned this earlier, the importance of us going out to really find other strategic plans that had an emphasis on equity, right? Believe it or not, there are not a whole lot of plans out there to talk about racial equity. A lot of them talk about equity, but a lot you will not find that specifically say racial equity. And this is why I believe Alexandria City Public Schools, strategic plan 2025 is so bold and is so courageous, because it's so important that equity and racial equity being at the heart of our work is included in there. We also looked at, as I mentioned earlier, our strategic planning book, workbook, and I'm going to show you an example of that today, but it was really an opportunity for us to look at key findings in regards to our data in Alexandria City Public Schools, for us to start really doing a disaggregation of our data, not just by race, but also by learning abilities, by economics as well, and socioeconomics within our school division, and start to identify some trends, because that data actually helped us to be able to determine what our focus as a school division needed to be. And it allowed us to be bold and courageous without saying, hey, we're just doing what people around the country are doing. We're saying we're doing what we need in Alexandria City Public Schools based on our data. And it is showing us that we have not been serving our students well, all of our students, well. Our classroom distribution analysis, and I think this is so important because a lot of times this is a missing component for a lot of school divisions where you're focused and so excited and about, you know, your overall data and looking at your graduation data and that type of thing. And you forget about some of the specialized programs that you have within your organization or within your school division. And it's important for you to do a disaggregation of that enrollment, you know, to dig deeper, to see, you know, are your Black and Brown students enrolled in those honors courses or on those special pathways, such as for us, our health sciences program and our college preparatory classes, you know, as well as our dual enrollment courses that are with the university that's locally here. So these are things that you're going to have to really analyze so that you can start telling that narrative around what your disparities or inequities are within your organization. This is an example of our strategic planning workbook. So excited about this document because we were able to look at 3 years of our data. And this was something that, you know, it's easy to tell a strategic planning committee what the issues or what our wrongs are as a school division. It's a lot more eye-opening and impactful and powerful when you provide the data and you allow your strategic planning groups to identify their challenges themselves. And that is exactly what we did. We were able to share our district-wide data and allow our strategic planning committee that was extremely diverse. I mean, we had people from all walks of life, all different types of gender, different roles and responsibilities, from teachers to custodians to bus drivers to students to the superintendent to board members. I mean, the list goes on and on. We wanted to ensure that we had everyone within our school division or every stakeholder within our school division represented on our team and having a seat at the table, which a lot of times you focus so much on the loudest group. And those are the people you end up putting in on your strategic planning committees. We wanted to make sure that we had people that we had to ask to be a part of the strategic planning committee, too. And I think that was a very powerful move on our end. Why the strategic plan? I'm going to say it time and time again. I know that Dr. Campy talked about policies and procedures. That is so important. Don't get me wrong. That's probably one of the most important things, because that's sustainable when you have this put into policy, because policy drives your practice. Your strategic plan is your roadmap. If you don't have a roadmap to success, you are not going to be able to attain the goals that you're setting for your school division. And a part of our mission and a part of our vision and a part of our core values in Alexandria City Public Schools were so important in order to drive this work. So we had to incorporate racial equity into our work so that when the board adopted our plan And when we get this pushback that we're starting to get right now with some of these changes that we are making as a school division, and mind you, we only adopted our plan in June, so a few months ago, we can go back and reference, okay, there was a unanimous vote on this plan, and that plan stated racial equity is the heart of our work, right? So it's not Dr. Hutchings' plan. It's not ACPS's plan. You know, this is our community's roadmap to really change the narrative for our youngest learners who are our students in Alexandria City Public Schools. So I want to go right into why racial equity, because that is a key component, and that's the difference when we talk about equity in Alexandria City Public Schools. You know, and Dr. Camp, you really touched on this when you talked about your anti-bias and other policies that you all had in place and anti-harassment policies. Race is the root cause. Race is the root cause. You know, we want to jump to, okay, well, let's talk about special ed, or let's talk about LGBTQ, or let's talk about our discipline disparities. When you add race to any one of those topics, that narrative gets worse the moment you put race before it. So the one thing we've been avoiding so many times is avoiding the uncomfortable conversation around race and leading with that first. It is no one's right to be comfortable. And I say that time and time again. So you have to push people into discomfort in order to see results and to see success. Racial equity for us is when race does not define or determine the quality of life, the opportunities, and the outcomes for any single one of our students. And it is so important that you define racial equity, because everybody has a different definition. Everybody has a different walk of life. So you have to define that as an organization. So when people join your school division, they know exactly what you mean when you say racial equity. They know exactly what you stand for and exactly what you're striving to do. And then finally, I just want to go through the establishing these clear principles. And these are specific areas that, you know, I believe will get you and your organization to where you're trying to be. You got to be data informed. And, you know, I talked about our workbook and assessments and having the appropriate metrics. You got to have a voice. I always say that you cannot make change until you have a seat at the table. And our most marginalized communities deserve a seat at the table. We need to seek to find them in our communities and make sure that they're sitting there to give us their truth, or we're not going to be able to overcome some of those barriers and obstacles. You got to have that equity focus. And, you know, I always say a racial equity focus, because race to me is the root cause to everything that happens within our organizations. And you definitely have to have that systemic alignment throughout your organization. And you have to be able to prioritize and have those key metrics. Everything can't be important. If everything is important, you're not going to accomplish anything. So I just wanted to pause there and leave you all with that. And I'm looking forward to our Q&A as we continue with this presentation.
Thank you so much. What a powerful group of thought leader practitioners. You are really putting, walking your talk and putting it in policy and putting it in practice. I am so impressed with the work in San Lorenzo and Alexandria City. Gentlemen, thank you for sharing that. Layla, from what you heard today, tell us a little bit about, from the research perspective, how do you tie this together?
Thanks, Val. So I think one of the things that stands out to me as I was listening to Daryl and Greg talk about their journeys is the importance of doing structured analysis. And so when we think about looking at other districts' policies, so doing a policy analysis, and there are great rubrics and frameworks out there. I know the Great Lakes Equity Center, for example, has a great policy analysis rubric that folks can reference if they're embarking on this journey. The other piece of this, and I want to come back to the equity audit framework that I described and how we use the research to inform methodologies and how you're going to design the questions, is one thing that Greg highlighted, the power of data. And so if we take an approach where it's top-down policies, we're not actually going to change the system. And so by looking at the policy like San Lorenzo did and digging into the classroom distribution analysis analysis that Greg referenced sheds light on where the deficits are and where the issues are. And then it's about bringing everybody around the table. And so really thinking through what are the questions that you're hoping to answer. And really, all of these questions end up coming down to research questions within your district. And I think sometimes we don't think of it that way. But what we heard was engaging stakeholders. And, you know, in both districts, there were focus groups. They were interviewing folks, conducting surveys, digging into your historical data to see what the trends are. And so what I would just say is, as you're looking at where you currently are and where you want to go, really being thoughtful about the research questions that you're crafting so you can make sure that you're asking the right questions and then using the right methodology to address those questions.
So it sounds like you all have really challenged the status quo. You've looked at yourselves in the mirror, you've looked at your data, you've done a scan of what is, and you have in your minds a vision of what it should be. Talk to us, there's a question in the chat room about how do you develop that knowledge and awareness with staff, teachers, and others that might have unconscious bias that they just are not aware of. How do you help them embrace this equity agenda without feeling defensive?
Greg, you want to take the first shot at that? I definitely can add to.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing, honestly, is that you have to understand that some people are going to be defensive, right? Some people are going to shed tears. Some people are going to feel guilty. And I think it's important to start any type of division-wide training with that in mind from the beginning. That's one thing that we have been talking about in Alexandria City Public Schools. We have to have a division-wide training for anti-racism. We started with a book study on how to be an anti-racist, you know, Kendi's work, Ibram X. Kendi's work. And a part of that is you as an individual finding within yourself, what are your biases? What are your racist tendencies? And the more that we're able to kind of like do some self-reflection and self-care to ourselves in regards to being racist, because we all are racist, no matter who you are, whether no matter what color you are, we all have racist tendencies, period. We have to be willing to really dig deep into that, and we have to train our staff to know how to identify what these racist behaviors are and how do you overcome them and how do you, you know, try to really avoid them from coming to fruition when you're in that classroom or in our school buildings.
You know, I so agree with you when it comes to discomfort. Our goal is for people to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We think just right aligned with the four agreements when you're having courageous conversations. And once again, this comes from the Pacific Educational Group. The number two agreement is we want you have to experience discomfort. The status quo is not acceptable. Being comfortable with the type of student achievement results that we're getting is actually educational malpractice. That's our stance. We're complicit if we're not trying to work actively. So being uncomfortable is actually progress. It's actually progress. And there are a number of ways of entering to the conversation. Dr. Hutchins mentioned this, the data. That's one way of making people uncomfortable. And I think it's needed, right? The data can make people, and I would say should make people uncomfortable. If you're okay with seeing the inequitable outcomes as exemplified by the data, when you're looking at data disaggregated by race, if you're comfortable with it, then you shouldn't really, in my opinion, you shouldn't be working in our school systems. It needs to make us uncomfortable. We've gotten too used to being comfortable with seeing a result where we can predict the results of students based on race. My last part is too, I don't want people to forget the quantitative. I'm sorry, we lean on the quantitative, but I don't want people to forget the qualitative data too. We have one of our students, just by opening up student voice at one of our outstanding elementary schools, Hillside Middle School, under the directorship of outstanding principal, Ms. Maraima Machado, that worked with teachers in giving just an opportunity for student voice. And one of our students wrote an essay that it ended up getting picked up on a national level by Vox. And I don't know, maybe you can drop it in the box, in the chat box, and you can see it. One of our students just wrote about her experience being Black. And obviously it was right after the killing of George Floyd. And it makes you think. So we're okay with whether it be the numbers or the lived experiences of our students and families with utilizing those as tools to make people uncomfortable. And once again, uncomfortable for the sake of progress.
Thank you, gentlemen, both for that. The idea that we cannot learn unless we get really new information and uncomfortable with the status quo, and that's where growth comes from. But it is difficult. And so I applaud you both for taking it on courageously and with intentionality, because it's clear that you have, both from the classroom and from the boardroom. Would you all talk to us about, I was intrigued about the site equity walks. What are your look fors? Why don't you walk, if you could just help us envision, what does an equity walk look like? Is that in San Lorenzo that you all do that?
Yeah, in San Lorenzo, we, and once again, I take limited credit because we're all working to get better with this. And I happened to join a system that had some systems already in place. But in other systems that I've been a part of, we have engaged as well. So what do we look for when we do the work? It's equity. We start off our equity walks by having conversations with the site leadership team. And within those conversations at the stage we're in right now, we always ask our site leaders, what would you like us to look for? In other words, we, as usually central office administrators, we see ourselves as support. We are support roles. So this is not a walk to blame the site. No, it's not that. It's a way of looking at us and the outcomes that we get within the system. So we never blame the site. It's about the work that we have as central office leaders in supporting the site. So we ask them, what would you like us to look for through an equity lens? Invariably, though, we do notice things like if you can walk into a classroom without a master schedule and based on the racial composition of the class, if you can predict what type of class that is, well, that's not what we want. We want to end the predictability of student learning outcomes and experiences based on race. So we look for things like that. We look for interactions is something that's frequently our principals often say, but we want to see. Here's an example. We want to see signs that we provide a welcoming environment for students, irrespective of their racial origins. So we look at it from that lens, but we let the principals give us a lot of feedback of what they want to see. There are rubrics and all that attached to it. That's the potentiality, but we've decided to utilize a supportive approach. What do you want us to look for?
That's great, Dr. Camp, because you're involving the folks who are going to be in the change process in the how you change. What would you add to that, Dr. Hutchings? When you go in your schools, what do you look for?
So the main things that we are using some work from ASCD. Our equity work framework is being used out of ASCD's framework, and it specifically is looking at how are our students engaged in our classrooms. For example, it's not just about kids raising their hands and teachers having an objective on the wall, but our students really asking thought-provoking questions that are tied to the curriculum. When we're in our classrooms, are our curriculum materials, are they a reflection of the students that we serve? Are we making sure we're acknowledging the different cultures? I mean, we have over 120 languages spoken in Alexandria City Public Schools. I mean, it is very, very diverse, 120 languages in our school division. And it's important for students to feel that they are welcomed, in our buildings. And that is what we're looking for. We just recently revamped our teacher evaluation system because it's important for teachers to, one, know what we are looking for when we're in our classrooms, because teacher evaluation programs are not supposed to be gotcha moments. It really is supposed to be an opportunity for you as an instructor and as a teacher to grow professionally. And we are already upfront telling you, if you want to be exemplary, this is what exemplary looks like. This is what your kids are doing in a classroom. This is what you are doing in a classroom as a teacher and as a professional. So those are some of the things that we're looking at.
Thank you so much. Lourdes posted a question about African-American students and Latino students both experience inequity and injustice. How are you all working to make sure that the Latino voice is just as loudly recognized in the era of Black Lives Matter?
Go ahead.
Oh, you can go ahead. You can go ahead.
that's a good question. I think it is important in the era of Black Lives Matter. And I would pose the question, if this is the era of Black Lives Matter, then what have been all of our previous eras? But I won't go there. I could say this. We look for opportunities. For us, it's with 56% of our students being Latinx, then, you know, that is our majority in San Lorenzo. So we ask. We just recently started a Latino family advisory group, but also we're really looking to engage our students more so and what that means to them. And I mentioned the students organized against race. So we're looking to uplift student voice, regardless. I would even say our European American students, only 7%. But they have an experience, too, that we need to learn from and with in order so we can serve all students. So I say white is a color, right? And the important thing here is we want to have voices to recognize their unique experiences. We had a conversation recently about law enforcement on campuses, and we recognized that when we met with the student advisory group, that student advisory group might have an opinion, some thoughts. But we also recognized, and this is a good sign, that the community recognized that it was important to say, wait a minute, maybe we needed to pause and have a concentrated conversation with a student group based on race to see if there, what are the similarities and differences when they see law enforcement on our campuses. And that was just one example. But we are interested in hearing from all of our students and to know about the lived experience. I mentioned we have about 14% Asian American students, right? So what does it mean when you have federal leaders that are talking about the coronavirus through a lens that may not make that's harmful to our Asian American students? What does that mean for our community? So once again, I think Black Lives Matter is the era, but I think the philosophy is still the same, that we want all of our students to matter. And we recognize there's some uniqueness and experiences based on race.
Well, you all have clearly walked the talk that all children matter and all children have voice. And I thank you for everything that you're doing in your school districts. And up to all of our folks who are watching this afternoon, we want to encourage you all to come back next Thursday and visit with us again. We're going to be at a different time slot next Thursday. We're going to be at 10:30 in the morning, and Dr. Bryant Marks from the National Training Institute for Race and Equity will be a tremendous, and thank you, Kelly, it's December 3rd, not next week. I think everybody's going to be having Thanksgiving next week in America, so sorry about that one. But the following week, we just corrected me, 2 weeks from tonight, will be Dr. Bryant Marks at 10:30 in the morning, a little bit early. But that's when we could get him. And he is a Morehouse College professor, and he's tremendously dynamic at helping us walk in the shoes of our students that we serve. I want to thank you all again, this amazing panel. I just learned so much tonight, and I'm so uplifted by what you're doing. Layla, thank you for the research and for your team who helps lead this work, the reflective work. Thank you both Dr. Camp and Dr. Hutchings for being with us tonight, and to our EdWeb team for their expert managing of all of these wonderful discussions. Everybody, please stay safe, stay well, and have a beautiful Thanksgiving. We are so grateful for all of our educators in this country. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.